You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
Hello, folks. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at majorityreport.ting.com.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, November 9th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. It's a Casual Friday of the week following the election. So who will join us? Well, of course you know who will join us. Cliff Schechter. And also joining us for, well, maybe he'll give us a movie review. The Obamabot. Andy Kindler. Who may very well be apoplectic. We don't know. Also on the program today, not much else. We're pre-recording this. We've given you a lot of content this week, and of course we're all exhausted. You members, I'm sure, are enjoying the 24 minutes of that ranting lunatic. Many of you can find it other places, but we wanted you to be able to carry it around so that you could brighten your day at will. Remember, not safe for work, but you've probably already heard it. In which case, you know that. Just a little bit of house cleaning. Podcastawards.com, folks. Podcastawards.com. Vote for us for People's Choice and News and Politics. Head over there, podcastawards.com. You can vote every day until the 15th, so only a couple more days left for you to vote. It helps us. It brings us new listeners. For those of you who are not members but want to help out the show because you don't want to pay for it, this is a great way of helping us. Of course, we have other ways where you can support the program. You can use our Amazon link at majority.fm/support the show. We're getting around that time of year, folks, where justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate, coupon code MAJORITY, gets you some of the best coffee from some of the best coffee purveyors in the country. They're out of Madison. Use that coupon code. And there are other ways you can support the show, of course. Facebook, Twitter, follow us, like us. Don't make me throw a fit like that lady. Do not make me throw a fit like that lady did. Of course, we got that survey, but we'll send that out in an email blast next week. And so we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, Mr. Cliff Schechter.
It's a sunny day, but you still have made mistakes. The sunlight. Anybody's life harder. I wouldn't guess you had a hard story.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Ting. Ting, T-I-N-G.com. Ting is a new mobile service that makes sense. It's all about bringing billing clarity, usability, and a big savings to mobile phone users. It's built on the Sprint network. They've got a bunch of geeks there who provide great, excellent technical service, any type of customer service that you need. And if you use less than you anticipate in terms of megabytes or minutes or text messages, you're automatically credited the difference at the end of each month. It's clear billing. It makes sense. If you go to majorityreport.ting.com, check out their usage calculator, see how much money you'll save. And if you end up using their service and buying one of their handsets, you'll get $50 off by going to majorityreport.ting.com. Go there, just try out the usage calculator, see how much money you'll save. Ting, it just makes sense.
Remember high school when you and Jackie went swimming in the pond? Now all you do is eat, shave, and sleep.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, before we have Cliff Schechter on, we first must play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter. LibertasLLC.com.
Well, hello, Cliff Schechter from Ground Zero in Ohio.
Yes, Samuel, you could call it that. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. It is both nice to have the election over, nice that Mitt Romney is not the president, and it's been, I have to say, an unmitigated delight to watch the meltdown that is happening on the right in the Republican Party.
Just Karl Rove, that one moment on Fox was maybe one of my happiest moments this year. I'm not sure what that says about me, but nonetheless.
Well, I think you and I both share that sort of politics aside, I mean, politics, there are obviously far more important implications about this election than the personal satisfaction that people like, particularly you and I, get from seeing people like Karl Rove not just grovel, but really make a national ass of himself. I mean, short of finding him sort of in a ball in the hallway, you know, in the back stairwell of Fox News, naked, crying into a bottle.
Like lying in the fetal position, curled yes. up and crying, please make it stop kind of thing.
That it's hard to imagine a more sort of just sort of public thrashing. And now, 2 days later, we're actually seeing, I mean, you know, we've got a lot to talk about, but let's definitely talk about this. We're now seeing him in a very public way having to defend himself to these billionaires that he took hundreds of millions of dollars from. You know, of course, he's throwing Romney under the bus. I mean, we anticipated a lot of this, but it's fascinating.
It's so much fun, too. It's fun to see Donald Trump ripping to him on Twitter, and you just hope that maybe there's a cage match in the making there when they're going after each other and they're both losing their minds. Of course, Trump's calling for revolution and tried to erase his tweet doing that. It was just – I couldn't think of any more fun than watching Megyn Kelly and Bret Baier, who are obviously Fox personalities and conservative, literally talking to him like he was a crazy person, telling him it's over. And at one point when Charles Krauthammer came on, Bret Baier saying, well, you're a psychiatrist. Charles, can you help us here? I mean, they literally were sitting there openly mocking Rove. And My response to the whole thing is to give advice to Karl Rove, as I've tried to in the different places where I appear, which is if you go over to Shelley Adelson's place and walk in and you see plastic on the floor, you should probably run.
That's right. because it also it the wonderful thing is it reflects very poorly on people like Shelley Adelson and these billionaires. And I think, you know, this is, I think, actually an important element for some type of social change, is to unmask these guys as being, you know, who very successful in certain businesses, most of them having, or at least, you know, in the course of Shelley Adelson, in terms of the Koch brothers, having cut corners, had done things that were unethical, done things that have attracted much investigation and investigations that are continuing, particularly in terms of Adelson. We know that the Koch brothers, their father got a lot of their money in sort of
building refineries for Stalin.
Exactly. And so it is nice to put these guys in the proper context. And that is sort of an added bonus, that I a value add, as I think these guys would say.
It's huge. And just seeing the punditry on the right and the people that were predicting, pulling things out of their rear ends beforehand. George Will saying he was going to, you know, 321 electoral votes to Romney, and he was going to win Minnesota. My favorite was perhaps the usually crazy tarot card reader, Peggy Noonan, who wrote in her column that she could feel the vibrations in the air. And that's how she knew that Mitt Romney was going to. I mean, these people are just such jokes, and the fact that they're still – and I predicted every time I saw one of those, I was like, well, when each of these people are remarkably wrong, they're still going to be, remind yourself, as they were about Iraq, and they as they were about global warming, as they were about the economy and everything else, you will still see them on your television set, and you will still see them written, able to write in major news outlets. That's what's amazingly pathetic. As to the billionaires, the thing that's been as much fun, I don't know if you saw that piece in Politico about how angry they all are.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, to me, reminds us again, as you pointed out, that maybe they're good at cutting corners, and some of them had connections, and they worked with people like Stalin and God knows who else. But when they want to try to claim that, you know, they built it, and this is a meritocracy where they just got there by their smarts. If these people were stupid enough to believe what the Romney campaign was feeding them that last month or two, which it seems from this political piece they were shocked that Romney lost, and by the margin he lost by, if they really were that shocked, they really need to, you know, it would be nice for them to imagine their own value systems and look at the fact that obviously this isn't a meritocracy, because if it was, they would be homeless.
Indeed. And now I have to say, one of the things that I have felt quite strongly for, we'll get into the demographics, but soon, because, you know, I think the demographics are, well, let's start with that. I mean, you know, the reason why Gallup and Rasmussen in particular were so off base was because they were not accounting for the fact that there was a change in there's been a change in the demographics in this country that has been evolving, obviously, over the course of years. They also they didn't account for that in any fashion. They assumed that 2008 was this tremendous fluke. And so they were basing their likely voter models and their voter models more on 2010 or 2004. And the funny thing is that Lindsey Graham was the guy who had sort of sounded the alarm about a month ago when he said, you know, there's just not enough angry white guys out there for us to continue on this path. And there seems to have been a real understanding very quickly, and an admission, you know, whether it was Limbaugh or Dick Morris or whomever, of their, and you know, Bill O'Reilly, their total lack of understanding of the changes that have taken place in this country. And it's,
and what do all those guys have in common? I can't think what it is. They're all old and white.
Well, indeed.
I sent something on Twitter, I think. I said, just imagine a number of old white heads exploding right now. as we were passing gay marriage initiatives, legalizing pot, re-electing a black president, electing our first Buddhist to the U.S. Senate, electing our first open lesbian to the U.S. Senate. I mean, just if you think about the things that went on and the demographic, just let's call it a time bomb. I think it's a good thing, so I don't mean that to sound negative. And this is the anger lashing out, and whatever issues that come across, and this is the key point that we all now that we've won this thing, and now the Senate won in a big way, and we obviously the gerrymandered House seats hurt us, and the some targeting decisions which we could talk about another time by the DCCC, which I think are inane and who knows, but we picked up 7 to 10 House seats depending on how a few of these recounts work out. So in the end, this big night that we had, and all the issues we care about, this new demographic coalition, for the most part, is on our side.
Right.
You know, when it comes to addressing immigration reform, global warming, addressing an issue that's important, dear to me, gun massacres, and passing real gun safety legislation. When it comes to protecting the social safety net, young people, people of color, single women, gays, we're all on the same page on this stuff.
Right.
Putting aside the
economic issues that we end up talking about, this is part of the coalition, and there is what's fascinating is these cultural issues, which for 30 years, 40 years, I mean, if you include sort of like the whole Southern strategy and its the evolution of that Southern strategy into being anti-immigrant and, frankly, anti-brown people. And
religion.
And religion.
Yeah, that was sort of the second wave of the Southern strategy.
It is. It's fascinating because these are all becoming now liabilities. It's as if the life preservers that were keeping the Republican Party afloat have now suddenly all turned to stone.
And you know what the famous quote is? And I'll let you talk. I don't mean to cut you off, Sam, but I think it's sort of it's instructive. And who said it, when it was said, if you look at who he is now, which was in the late 60s, this memo that came out that Pat Buchanan, then a 27-year-old Nixon aide, or obviously after Nixon was elected, I guess it would have been the early 70s then, but in any case, and he were, and in it advising Nixon to embrace the Southern strategy and saying, if we were to cut the country in half or saw the country in half, we would have by far the larger half, the larger piece, larger chunk, whatever it was. And now the beauty is that Pat Buchananism has run its course.
Right.
He ran his two presidential elections and couldn't even get it through the Republican Party, but he was actually a force in the Republican Party, and now he's all but gone. And with his being all but gone are the people he represents. And we're now at a point where his half is the much smaller half. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's stunning. And, I'll tell you something. My argument has been that the Republican Party has created a Frankenstein in terms of this electoral base, and that Frankenstein now has run loose into the village, and they cannot contain Frankenstein. And the villagers, the Frankenstein can't take on the whole village. I don't want to belabor this metaphor, but the fact
keep
is,
going with Frankenstein. I like Frankenstein.
Well, they can't reverse it. I mean, we saw what happened with immigration reform under Bush, right? I mean, there was an attempt by Bush and Rove. They saw this coming. They attempted to reach out to Latinos, but
even some Southern Republican senators joined them, like Lindsey Graham and John Cornyn, and some people that knew that this is the way the party had to go. But the extremists wouldn't even those guys were not crazy enough.
Now, I will say this, okay, now, because this is my belief, and I think this is also the case not just with immigration, I think it's also the case with issues like sovereignty, women having sovereignty over their own bodies and being treated as citizens, full class citizens.
We see this in terms of
marriage equality. We are slowly just basically those people in society who perceive gay and lesbians and transgender and bisexuals as being some type of, other and freaks that we should be worried of. Those people, frankly, are dying off. And it is becoming a liability for them. Now, with all that said, and saying that I thought there is a cottage industry on the right that will not allow them to make any terms, this is absolutely stunning. Last night, 6:30 at night, well, actually, right before we tape this, because this is a pre-tape, Politico reports on what Sean Hannity said on his radio program today. Are you ready for this? You probably haven't even heard it, because
I'm not sure I have, but I'm pretty excited to hear it.
He said on Thursday that his position, that he has evolved on immigration and now supports a pathway to citizenship.
Magically, he evolved.
Yes. Hours after the election, the United States needs to get rid of the immigration issue altogether. It's simple to me to fix it, he said. I think you control the border first. You create a pathway for those people that are here. You don't say that you've got to go home. And that is a position I've evolved on, because you know what? It's got to be resolved. The majority of people here, if some people have criminal records, you can send them home. But if people are here law-abiding, participating for years, their kids are born here, you know, first secure the border, pathway to citizenship, done. You can't let the problem continue. It's got to stop. Now, the problem, of course, he's talking about is exactly what we've been talking about. The tremendous liability this presents to the Republican Party, because the reality is that to the extent that this that immigration was a problem, at least from his perception, we are now a net non. We see more people leaving the country than coming into the country in terms of immigration. So the problem he's talking about is the political liability it represents to the Republicans. And frankly, I'm just stunned. I think it's a wonderful development, because he's taking a position that is arguably to the left of President Obama. In terms of the deportations that have taken place.
But it might create the space for President Obama.
Indeed.
Because it'll obviously, what these clowns say, and you know, the thing about Hannity is he's of the clownish, entertaining variety, but he's also, I think, a true believer, a hackish Republican. You know, he's always been more of a Republican than a conservative.
Yes.
You rarely have seen him attacking the Republican Party, except for when he was doing it in a way that he thought helped the Republican Party.
Yes.
So what's interesting about him doing that is he's going to try to create a space for Republicans to embrace that. Others of the Rush Limbaugh variety,
right,
I don't think will.
That's right.
So
I mean,
you may
Sean
actually
Hannity,
have it out among these right-wing hosts, which would just be even more delicious than what's going on right now. It would be so much fun.
Sean Hannity gets the faxes.
In terms of a
Sean
policy
Hannity,
perspective.
Sean Hannity gets the faxes. Limbaugh sends them out. In some respects, I think, to the Republicans. I mean, Hannity is just getting his talking points from Heritage. That's basically what he does. And so if he is saying this, he is not saying this. He didn't wake up in the middle of the night, come up with this idea. He has basically been told by the establishment of the Republican Party, we are done as a national party unless we can turn this ship around. Now, the real question is going to be, is Sean Hannity enough of a thought leader as opposed to a cheerleader in the Republican Party, as opposed to a guy like Limbaugh? You make this distinction that this will have an impact. I wonder if this won't hurt his ratings more than anything else.
I know. I'm really interested to see how it does do that. And I mean, people need to, you know, who haven't looked at the numbers need to understand that I think between the last election and this one, the percent of vote, Hispanic vote, Latino vote, went from 9% to 10%, and President Obama won 67-21 over 67. Wait, what was it? It was 67. I know. It was 67-31. Sorry, over McCain, and this time won 71-27. That's an 8-point swing.
Yep.
Among a group that grew and is only going to keep growing. And it's, you know, when you look at the biggest reasons why New Mexico was no longer a swing state, why Nevada, really the last month or two, they were still calling it a swing state, but it wasn't. I mean, they know it because they're destroyed on this. I mean, you know, President Obama didn't even play in Georgia, which has 16 electoral votes, one of the maybe the second biggest state. I'd have to look. The Republicans won after Texas. he didn't even bother there, and he only lost by 8 points.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's a real – they see the demographic shifts, and they are in a full-on panic about it. And I wonder if, you know, for them to make the turn the ship around, you're talking about a multi-generational project, I think. Because, you know, Sean Hannity can go out and say this, but the fact of the matter is you still have – a tremendous amount of animosity amongst the people who support the Republican Party towards brown people. I mean, that's...
Yes. That's going to be a problem in a serious way. I mean, conservatism has always had to embrace and bring in new groups or it dies, because inevitably conservatism represents what is past as opposed to obviously what is future, hence the name conservatism. So, you know, it was always a white Christian male, or I'm sorry, white Protestant male ideology. And, you know, if you went back to the times of when Al Smith was running, and you'd hear the anti-Catholic vitriol, but then they had to embrace Catholicism because they ran out of white Protestant guys. And it had to be, you know, they had to bring in, and then eventually they had to try to bring in some women, they had to bring in some Jews, and they had to, but they always are, and it's, they're at a point now where, at the very least, I think they realize they've got to bring in older Hispanics or or Latinos, or they're screwed. So I still don't know. Even with that immigration, that may bring in some younger Latinos too. But again, Latinos are part of this multicultural younger generation who are much more liberal in a variety of social issues. And that's what's going to be interesting, because I don't see how, you know, they still are going to need to appeal to this younger growing demographic.
Right.
And I don't see how they do that with their positions on gay marriage and on women's rights and things like that.
And then without alienating their entire electoral structure. I mean, that's the thing, is that they are really caught between a rock and a hard place. I think that this is as a national party, these guys are in a death spiral. I think they're going to control. I think the House, you know, based upon the gerrymandering, probably until the next census, or pretty darn close anyways. I mean, you know, we talk about Pennsylvania. You know, Pennsylvania, President Obama won by, what, 5-6 points, and yet they have a 13-5 discrepancy favoring Republicans in House seats. And that can only be explained by the gerrymandering. And
we've got a similar situation here in Ohio. Same thing in Florida. Probably a few other states that aren't even coming to mind, you know, right now. And it's that's exactly right. That if it wasn't for the gerrymandering, they likely would have lost the House, or certainly lost another 10 to 15 seats. And they'd be sitting, instead of sitting on a 15 or 18 seat majority, once the recounts are done, they'd be sitting on maybe a two to five seat majority at best. So you're right. They're going to have the House, and there's a good sort of 15 states in the union that literally are still all older white states that don't have any real cities, big cities, and many minority voters, where I suppose they can still get away with behaving like this.
Right.
But, you know, eventually, I mean, look, you know, one of the most interesting things I saw when I looked at the electoral map was that President Obama only lost Mississippi by 11 points.
Right.
And that should tell you something. It's because African Americans, which are a huge part of the population in Mississippi and hadn't been voting in the past through the history of Jim Crow and repression, they went and there was an effort made, and many, many African Americans were registered to vote and obviously turned out and voted.
And, you know,
at what point can the Republicans not take Mississippi for granted anymore? That's an amazing thought, isn't it?
And I have to say that, you know, the demographics are, in many respects, I guess, destiny, they say. But one of the things that I think that, you know, we need to also recognize in, as we are talking about this election, is that starting on Labor Day, essentially of last year, with President Obama's Labor Day speech, he started talking like a populist. And now, putting aside for a moment, we have spoken quite a bit, as we haven't necessarily seen him take economic populist measures in the way that we would like, or to any extent, frankly. But that does not diminish the fact that, to the extent that we talk about big issues that won this race for President Obama, we're talking about women's rights issues, whether it was, you know, equal pay, or issues of sovereignty over their own bodies, not just rights to have an abortion, but also to birth control. But also,
right.
You know, one of the things that really sticks out in a big, big way, and there's two, you know, there's a couple of elements to this, but if you look at that set of election issues, because, you know, Social Security didn't play an issue, didn't play a role in this election. Medicare played a much smaller role than I think we would have anticipated when Paul Ryan was picked. But if you look at the idea of Bain and vulture capitalism, which was cemented by Gingrich, and you carry that through to the auto loans, the auto bailout, whatever you want to call it, that played an incredibly significant role in this election. And those are similar, you know, those are the basically two sides of the same coin. The criticism of Bain was that it was about capitalism at the expense of American jobs, of the American people, of communities, of the idea that profits at any cost, no matter what it meant to the real economy. And you also look at the auto bailout, it's the exact same story. And this was a strength, not a liability for President Obama. And now, I don't know where he goes with that in the future, and putting that aside, but from a rhetorical standpoint, from an electoral issue standpoint, that has got to be one of the top three issues, I think.
Yeah, well, and I think it's up to us at this point to sort of keep these issues out there, not just us being you and me, all of us, and to make sure that you know, because that was the auto bailout was one of the most economically populist things that he did, and when you had that on one side of the ledger, and the other side of the ledger was Mitt Romney's sending jobs abroad and destroying people's lives for his own enrichment. And Republicans immediately elected into office with the help of some white working voters like here in Ohio and in Wisconsin, and those guys immediately going and attacking those workers. That created a very sort of created a stark contradiction. You know, on one side, you had someone who had stood up for workers, and that became kind of at an emotional level. On the other side, you had somebody who didn't. Now, you and I know, we've discussed this often. There's a real record beyond that.
Right.
There's the fact that you and I and others like us believe that President Obama should have done a lot more for homeowners, and could have.
And could have been far more supportive of unions. I mean, yes, there is, and I think even in the context of that auto bailout, I would have liked to have seen, you know, some measure of making the. You know, sort of the bondholders feel a little more of that pain as opposed to taking it out on the unions. But be that as it may, the rhetoric is part of the story that we can't we can't deny that at least in terms of where what we know is, functions with the works with the American public, the whole idea that this is somehow a center right country is completely belied by what inspired them to vote for President Obama.
Right. Well, the rhetoric that inspired them to vote for him, and, of course, as we just talked about, these statewide measures. I mean, they don't lie. 2-for-2 on legalizing pot, 4-for-4 in favor of gay marriage, and there's a whole bunch of other ones I can't think of off the top of my head that were in that progressive direction, too.
California.
On every level. I mean, Tammy Baldwin didn't get elected from Massachusetts.
Right.
She didn't get elected from New York or California. She got elected from what was a swing state this election.
And so,
you know, Sherrod Brown ran as a progressive populist and won the second time in a row. Oh, you can't do that. You have to run as a moderate. No, that in fact is wrong. You don't. You run.
And this
as,
is
you,
in Ohio.
You run as a progressive.
This
Go
is
ahead.
In Ohio, right? I mean, you know, I wonder. I mean, give me a sense. I mean, because I imagine you have dug into this, but to what extent do you think that John Kasich, whose name I did not hear very much at all in the context of Ohio from the pundits, because I think, you know, and basically I think I know this because of our conversations, but it seems to me that if John Kasich doesn't do this such strong anti-union measures, this could have been a very different situation there.
Oh, no doubt. And I would say I would ditto that with Scott Walker. But certainly Kasich was the worst of any of them, because as we've talked about a number of times on this show, he didn't just go after teachers. He went after firefighters and police who had been out of – when you look at some of the white workers here, they had been some of the more staunch supporters of Republicans. That wasn't just activating a group that was already against you. That was taking a group that had somewhat to largely been for you, and it was almost like losing two votes for everyone and sending them over to the other side and making them hate you. That was a part of what, put them on the contrasting, the opposite side, on the wrong side of this and made the Democrats seem even more populist. No, I mean, look, it used to be that, and it has been for a while, they've claimed you have to run as a centrist. You know, the president should, you run more as a centrist, you govern more as a progressive, or in particularly in swing states. And this was all just proven to not be true again, multiply. And if we take the 2010 election out, and I'm not saying you could just take it out. Obviously, it was a valid election and things happened, but I think we've argued before, and others who've written analysis of this, like Tom Frank and others who agreed with us, had President Obama handled policies and Congress handled policies differently, the anger that built up, from austerity and from other measures like that that led to a right-wing populist insurgency, perhaps never happens, and really might have gone in the way 1934 went for FDR, which was another enormous victory for the left. And so what I'm saying is, if you look at 2006, 2008, 2012, we're dealing with a different electorate now. This is at its most conservative, this is a center-left country.
Right.
And again, I'm not saying there aren't exceptions to that. I'm not saying that necessarily that's what Utah is or Alabama is or a couple states that are much whiter and older, more religious. But overall in this country, the vast majority now of this country is a center-left nation. And overall, it's a center-left country.
Yes.
And again, Sherrod Brown and Tammy Baldwin are just two that come to mind. I've talked before. We've obviously could talk about Al Franken in sort of a purplish state, and many others who've run as unabashed progressives and have won in states where, oh my God, you're not supposed to be able to do that. And how many times do these guys have to prove this again and again the last few elections that this is how you can win?
And I think the tough part is that we have a center right media, and I think that everything goes through that filter on some level, which brings us to the the big fight that you and I have been talking about for some time as we get to the fiscal cliff and the grand bargain and whatnot, which drives this deficit hysteria, but it's. It's interesting to see. I mean, the real, I think, implications of what we're talking about, and people should not misunderstand this. I think, we're going to end up seeing what President Obama does, and we'll have a more definitive notion of who he is. We all have our suspicions. But what is almost more relevant is, how what we're talking about is going to change the perception of House members, of members of the Senate. Sherrod Brown has showed a model, right? And this is going to impact and embolden, I think, the senators, the Democratic senators, to some degree anyways.
Right, and having Elizabeth Warren and Tammy Baldwin and others there to fill in some of those slots that were missing, after we lost Paul Wellstone and we lost Teddy Kennedy and Russ Feingold lost in the wave. And now you've got people that will be willing to stand up along with Sherrod Brown.
Yep.
And, when you've got more leadership, and I will tell you, having worked on a number of House races, of the 14 races, the work I did with Friends of Democracy, the super PAC, we're working for progressives. The 14 races I was on, we won 10, and there's 11 that we're up right now that's in a recount. And these are all terrific progressive candidates that knocked out people like Mary Bono Mack and looks like if the recount goes the way it should, we'll have knocked out Dan Lundgren and took out Charlie Bass, who mm-hmm. Simpson and Bowles, by the way,
right.
endorsed, and our candidate Ann Custer was able to beat him. We've just elected, the Senate and House, I will tell you right now, just became markedly more progressive. It's not even just the increased numbers of Democrats in both of them. It's really who you traded in and out for. It's getting rid of a Joe Lieberman for a Chris Murphy.
Right.
It's having Herb Cole, when he leaves, being replaced by Tammy Baldwin. And you see the same thing will be happening in the House, which is we really elected a great class of progressive leaders, and I don't think most people know so much about who the ones are in the House, but you're going to learn to know them because there just were some inspiring people that I got to meet in some of the work I did the last few months in trying to work with some of these folks to help get them elected. So there is a lot to look forward to.
It's going to be fascinating to see how the Democrats in the House and the Senate manage their relationship with Obama, because I think certainly, you know, a couple of years ago, I mean, before, early in 2010, my sense was that if he wins re-election, he's going to find himself to be very lonely. Now, in 2010, of course, was like sort of the height of the austerity talk, and he made that pivot later in 2011. But I think that it's going to be interesting to see how much these House Democrats and how much these Senate Democrats, and the Senate Democrats are a little bit different because the people coming up for re-election in 2 years tend to be coming from more red states off the top of my head. But
right.
in the House, anyways, it's going to be interesting to see how much these people flex their muscle because, you know, this wasn't a wave election per se. And it was sort of oddly not nationalized in the way that we would have imagined, like, you know, where Medicare was the overall issue. But these people ran as progressives, and I would imagine that they're going to, you know, we have a different dynamic here where they're not looking to the president as being the electoral leader of the party anymore because he's not running for re-election.
Right, and I'll say, you know, in a number of these House races that I was involved in. There's no doubt that women's issues played a key role because you couldn't get away from it. The Republicans put that on the front burner by offering their wildly interesting theories about rape, it seemed, on a weekly basis. But I will say it may not have been nationalized that way, but I'll tell you a number of the congressional – I'd have a hard time finding too many of the congressional races I worked on in key swing districts where Medicare wasn't a key part of the race, pointing out that their opponent – had voted, this was mostly Republican incumbents and mostly Democratic challengers, and the Democrats pointing out the Republicans had voted for and supported the Paul Ryan budget and to voucherize Medicare was a key part of what most of the candidates I was working with were talking about. So it did, you know, it may not have played the role on that. It was the overall key issue Obama was talking about, but I can tell you on a lot of races on the ground, it played a role, and I saw it move numbers. And so that should be an interesting because a lot of these candidates I work with promised, quite frankly, that they would not allow Medicare or Social Security to be touched. And you know, now is the point where we have to see, you know, were the people right. that ran on that. And you saw that in a couple of very progressive Senate candidates who are now going to be senators. The same thing. You know, will they stand up? Will they use the bully pulpit that they have, the podium they have, to stand up even to the president if they have to and say, no way. Well, now, I will not go along with this.
Harry Reid, just the other day, said we're not touching Social Security. He said in the past that, you know, Social Security is the best thing since I think it was like fish and loaves or something to that effect. And
the air conditioner, I'd say.
We're seeing you know, the sort of the outlines. Boehner has offered essentially what was the Mitt Romney plan for raising revenue, you know, let's cut taxes and then let the free market, the invisible hand of the of the marketplace raise all ships or whatever. I don't know. It goes into some type of black box. So what do you think?
In Boehner's defense, he probably was drunk at the time.
Yes, to be fair.
Not to be fair.
But just briefly, like, do we have a sense of what's going on now, or are we still like waiting to see how this all shakes out?
I think we've got somewhat of a sense. I mean, we've seen at least 30 plus right senators sign on and say they won't touch Social Security. You've heard Harry Reid say it. You've heard Chuck Schumer say it, and we've now had a couple Senate candidates who are just elected say it. I'm not sure how it plays out yet. I would never want to be overconfident, and I'm not, because I know the game as it's played on the other side, and I know how much money Pete Peterson has to spend. And you already see, what's his name, Orzag, everybody has a goofy name, who was in the Obama administration, has already written a piece saying, oh, you should cut Social Security, because, you know, he's at Goldman Sachs. He won't rely upon it. So you're going to see that. But at the same time, I feel better because of who we elected. You know, having Elizabeth Warren there makes you feel better. Having some of the House candidates, again, you never know. People can get to Washington and can change, although Elizabeth Warren's already been there and didn't change. Right. But we elected some people that I would call leaders, real leaders, and people who stood out and very clearly and flatly said they would not allow Social Security or Medicare to be touched. I think we've got a great base of people. As you know, you never win these things on the inside or the outside. You have to have a good inside and outside game. And I think it's up to us to build the outside game and to put the pressure where it needs to be put. But I think we've got some great people on the inside who can make this argument when it needs to be made, too.
Right. I think you're right about that. Now, what do you anticipate? I'm curious. What's going to be interesting to see what happens really with the Republican? Well, there's going to be two things interesting happening in the House. What happens in terms of Boehner and what happens in terms of Pelosi? I am just the idea of Steny Hoyer being the minority leader is just horrific.
Frightening.
Yeah. I mean, it's just horrific. And the thing is that, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but what I've always heard about Steny Hoyer is that he is a guy who, because he so easily raises corporate money at home, he goes out and he takes a lot of time helping all Democrats running for office, regardless of their ideological ilk. He'll go into town and it makes a difference. He's number two Democrat. He goes into town and he gets them some free media. He raises them some money and he's owed a lot of favors. And, you know, it's not. And let me put it in a less sort of a cynical way. He's generated a lot of goodwill from people in the caucuses in a way that, frankly, real progressives have a tougher way about it. Progressive Democrats are not in bed as much with corporations. So, a guy like Steny Hoyer, really scares me.
And I would agree with you. That's dangerous. And the truth is, I don't know who we have lying in the wings that could even come close to challenging him.
Right.
And there probably are others that are more expert on the inner workings of the House than I am. But, yeah, I mean, because it's true, we need Pelosi to stick around because I don't think there's any way that he doesn't become the minority leader if she's not there.
Right.
And that becomes a real problem.
Well,
and, again, at some point I need someone to explain to me why during this past cycle, when there were a number of vulnerable Republicans in districts that President Obama won in 2008, but happened to be chairman of committees for some reason, another Democratic leader who's aspiring to become leader of the Democratic Party, Steve Israel, who's very close with the Blue Dogs, why he chose to literally not target any of them. The DCCC refused to help anybody running against a chairman. And I, worked with a Democrat in California who could have knocked out one of the most corrupt Republicans in there, Buck McKeon, who's basically the handmaiden of the defense industry. And they wouldn't lift a finger, just as they wouldn't lift a finger to go after Daryl Issa or Paul Ryan or Eric Cantor. A number of people that actually were in districts that were swing districts, some that actually lean Democratic. And so it's sort of like, if you don't get Steny Hoyer, who else is at the top there that you would want to take his place? And that's worrisome to me.
All right. Well, that's something that we're going to be watching in the weeks and months to come. Anything else that we should be talking about? Have we even said that guy's name? What was the name of that guy who ran for president for the Republicans this year?
Oh, that's right. I was going to say we could make fun of Karl Rove again just because it's so much fun.
I don't even know if we've said
Mitt Romney. I'm interested. I want to know your theory quickly before we go as to what you think will be Mitt Romney's future role in public life. I'm thinking, most people hate him. Usually they get invited to sit on these goofy bipartisan commissions that normally don't do anything, kind of like Simpson Bowles. So you get those guys. Yeah, but I don't even know if Mitt Romney would be invited to sit on those things. Nobody likes him.
No.
Maybe he's just gone.
I think Romney's gone. I think he'll start some type of foundation or go back into private equity or, I don't know, stay at home with the kids. you know, and play fake tag football or whatever.
Hold them down and cut their hair.
Right, exactly. He can. I mean, who knows? You know, I'm pretty excited to hear the stories because you know, I mean, as quickly as we saw stuff coming out of the McCain campaign, I have a real strong feeling that we're going to hear some stories rather quickly as they attempt to run as far away from Mitt Romney as possible.
Oh, I promise you a half dozen books have already been pitched.
It's, the bane of my existence. How many titles are we going to see something like that?
I know. I'm excited to see the stuff come out. No, I think you're probably right. I think he'll probably settle in spending time in his car elevators and houses, and every once in a while pop his head up and to do something. But I don't think most people will want his endorsement nor seek it.
No.
I think he's pretty much done. The guy that we're going to see a lot of, sadly, is Paul Ryan, who I'm sure will.
Do you think Paul Ryan has been diminished?
For a run. There was talk he might resign from his House seat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's an article that was written, you know, whether this was a leak of somebody who wants him to do this. So I don't know if there's somebody trying to push him to do it, if it's actually real. But I don't remember where it was written, but the article said that they were trying to convince Ryan to leave Congress and set himself up with a real platform, maybe running a think tank, you know, because he's smart and stuff and gets numbers even though he doesn't. And write a book and do a number of things to kind of get himself set, because really it's 2 years from now when this thing will start again. It's not that far away with our crazy system, and that it would be a better platform than being stuck in committee meetings in the House. So
I don't know. I think you quit Congress to go and basically do something like that. I don't know, unless he maybe go, who knows, but, he'll end up on Fox News maybe or something like that. But
well, I think that's what they're thinking, right? Is have a number of platforms, have Fox News, magically have a column, you know, in the Wall Street Journal a number of other conservative organs, write a book, run a think tank, do a bunch of things to reestablish how brainy and cool you are. Maybe take some more video of yourself lifting weights with a hat on backwards, you know, stuff like that.
Well, it should be fun to watch. Cliff, as always, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Sammy.
I am excited to get some rest this weekend. Have a good Veterans Day, and we will talk to you next Friday.
You too, buddy. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Cliff.
Take care.
A goal!
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Time for a report. We are the majority. Not the sheeple. We are the majority. We the people. Why do we walk the walk? Why do we talk the talk? Why don't we just stand by? M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y, that's why.
Hello?
Hello, Andy?
Hey, Sam!
Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen, how are
Congratulations to all of us.
Yes, you must be very
excited. Even Glenn Greenfield.
Gay.
Bald.
Yes, well.
That's my new thing. Get progressive names slightly wrong.
Yes, that's.
Even Glenn Gary Field.
Yeah, you. Yeah, that's your new shtick, right?
Yes, because I can't think of one more progressive name. Oh, hope everything's over. I hope everything's okay over at Katrina Van Hoevel's house.
That must.
Hey, democracy
over.
Now. Yeah, I guess it is now. Amy Silverstein of La Brea Bakery.
But
this is like Norm Crosby for our century.
That's right. I mean, this must be very exciting for you with Obama's victory.
Obama, what a home run. We did it, Sam. We did it. We did it. First, it was a master stroke. Did you see the movie, The Master? Forget that movie. This was the movie. First, we threw the first debate, Sam. Threw it.
You know,
threw the first debate. All part of the plan,
Andy. Now, I gotta say that you sound like your voice is like you get into this mode. I don't know.
I am very. I'm pumped up. Very pumped up.
Did you watch Obama's acceptance speech?
This isn't your father's unmanned drones. These are not your father's unmanned drones. Sam. Got hope and change? Got hope? Hey, Sam, got change? I still believe in a place called hope and change. Are you fired up?
That's Clinton.
Are you ready to go? I am fired up. I am ready to go.
Well, no, wait a second. Let me ask you, were you in any way surprised?
I'm doing feel good.
No, it sounds like you are. Were you in any way surprised by the victory? I mean, did you think that the election would be this the electoral?
Well, I love Nate Silver, so I follow. I get his name right because I love that guy.
Uh-huh.
Follow him. So I was confident going in. I did speak to. I have my own. Like Howard Feynman claims to have his own sources.
Yeah.
I do too.
Oh, you do, and
yeah, they were agreeing with me.
And all those sources were saying that Obama was going to crush it.
If you have two people, you can play cards. Four people, then you have bridge. If you can have four people, you can have eight people. If you can have a community, you can have a nation. If you can have a universe, you can have dark matter. If you have dark matter, you can have a parallel universe.
I gotta say, Andy,
what?
It feels like
what?
An episode of Homeland or something, where you just get. Because
I have no why? Oh, because I'm. Oh, because you're not as excited as me.
No.
Because you're a faux-gressive, Sam. I get it. Faux-gressive. You kind of wish Obama had lost. I know how it feels. Obama. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
Hannity was right. He is the anointed one. He is the anointed one for real.
But,
oh, Heavenly Father, thank you for Obama. I pray to you tonight. Obama.
Listen, but Andy, you must have been also happy about what happened in the Senate, right? I mean, the Democrats picked up.
Yes. We picked up seats. Even Murdoch at the end said he thought it was God's will that he lose.
Oh, did he really? I didn't.
It's God's. It's God's. I wish I wrote material about politics. Then I'd be. You know what I'm saying?
When you go out and do your comedy, you don't do political stuff, do you? Or no?
I've done it. Well, I did say that I did get some laughs with Mitt Romney has agreed to release 10 years of his personality. Was a joke that was, and that would get big laughs.
Now I
and
like
then I
how,
go
you know,
right back into anti Chelsea Handler material. Safe ground.
This is a pro tip for people. When you are delivering your jokes and you're a comedian, you're not on stage, what you do is you change your cadence so that it's specifically not as funny.
Right. That's what I do. Hey. It's like you're picking don't peel back the curtains completely.
Right. No, I don't wanna ruin the
whatever it is that I might have going.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
yeah.
Do you play mostly in front of pro Obama crowds? Would you say
Obama? Obama! I am fired up. I am ready to go. Fired up. He is the master puppeteer. He is a cosmic puppeteer. He knew exactly what to do. If he had won the first debate, people would have been bored. He brought more eyeballs by losing.
So wait, are you saying
more eyeballs? He pulled it out of the fire.
No, are you
two out of three? People loved it.
So you're saying that in some way that he was playing 11 dimensional chess here. He was specifically through the first debate.
You name it, he does it. You want it, he's got it.
Now, are you?
Hey, you know what our new slogan is? Forward or backwards? Who cares? We won.
Forward or backwards?
Oh, ask me about Benghazi.
Well, what about Benghazi?
Who cares? We won. You lose. We won. We won. One, one, one. Oh, oh, oh. Give me an O, B, A. Give me an O, B, A, M. Give me an O, B, A, M, A, A. O, A, O, A. Barach, 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 Barach.
Are you all right? Are you, I think you, you
Obama!
Make...
Obama! Obama, if I was Obama. Hey, Netanyahu cares. Netanyahu.
Wow, we're going to have to
not Netanyahu,
modulate.
I don't know. I'm a rock.
Wow, this is so... now, you are...
I'm dizzy. I'm dizzy, Sam. I don't know. I feel like I'm going in and out, or I don't understand. Something... Did you put something in the ISDN line? Because I'm feeling weird.
You think we got ISDN lines here?
No, I know. I'm just pretending it was a big operation.
Yeah, no, we do this over. This is like I got some app on my.
My own comedy's cracking me up, Sam, the first time.
Did you really? Were you up on that? Well, I guess you're in California, right? So it wasn't that late.
It was not late. It was not a late night for me, but
now all of Hollywood.
With
this
champagne.
Is this for all you Hollyweird types out there in La La Land? Is this now like a national?
I like that one. I like that one. La La Land.
Is this like a national holiday for you guys, or what?
Yeah. Well, you never know. You know, everybody is so. Everybody is so. I can't think of one Los Angeles cliche right now. Everybody's so. Mellow? What are they?
Wait, who's that guy from the...
I never saw that show with Shrug. What was that show called?
Shrug? I don't know.
In the mid-80s?
No, I don't know.
That show came out?
That was before my time. Are you kidding?
I don't feel well. I'm losing the ability to bring up references.
Well, now,
It's Like You Know. That was the name of the show.
You live in L.A. Can you confirm or deny the reports that Adam Carolla was running through the streets naked the other night in a full-on meltdown?
I cannot confirm that. Yeah. But, you know, I can't confirm, but I would like to have seen that. What was he? Did he take a position on something?
No, I don't
what,
know.
What, did he? So the woman who won the Senate?
Yeah.
Upset?
Well, yeah, he was upset.
He never said that women couldn't run for office. He just said they weren't funny.
Right. Oh, okay. I was just... are there conservative? You deal with conservatives out there, right? But it's mostly just like your business peeps.
I would never talk to anybody who labeled themselves as conservative.
Have you been following like the meltdown online? I mean, have you seen? For me, you know, I felt that Obama was a far better
Obama,
choice than
Obama.
We're gonna have to do something.
He went down to South Carolina. And then he went to see a woman, said, come see me. I'm in South Carolina. He got into the car. It was raining. He had to put his umbrella in the back. He drove 7 hours, and then he walked in. And the woman came up from behind him and said, hello, are you ready? He said, huh? Are you fired up? And this woman, he called her recently. She couldn't even come to the rally because she's so busy on the phone. And then that was a good anecdote. Obama anecdote. Obama anecdote. He tells the best anecdotes. Obama butt! Obama butt! Obama butt having problems.
I think you may have confused your plugs with the. I think you're plugging yourself into where your Chevy Volt belongs.
Obama butt running out of material. Obama butt. Obama did not follow the election closely enough.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Andy.
Obama got very tired. Pell Grants. Why can't we have more Pell Grants? What is that? What do you call Jay Leno at a corporate gig? An unmanned drone.
Oh, what? Oh boy. So now, Andy, in all honesty, now what happens? I mean, do you guys are you going to get what happens if we see push by the president to pursue a grand bargain?
I think we got to go off the fiscal cliff, and then we have to create a situation where nobody can even climb up that cliff and get back on top of the mountain where the rest of us are.
See, so you
I'm not good with the when they start talking about cliffs, I think of actual cliffs. I just want Lawrence O'Donnell to run that Thelma and Louise footage one more time. Come
Who
on.
Who are you watching on TV now these days? All right, give me a breakdown because going forward now, where will an Obama bot? What TV shows do you watch?
It's all about the Young Turks.
Because you were, I know you were like a you could not stand Dylan Radigan, right?
Oh God, I he is. I hope he's better at this point. Is he still pissed off?
I have no
is
idea.
Is he still angry?
To him in ages.
I can listen to Lawrence. I can listen to everybody for a little while.
Right.
But Chris Matthews is the one who. Well, Joe Scarborough must resign. If they want to have a right wing guy in the morning, make him slightly more contemporary. Make him a guy, not a Florida right winger from the 90s.
All right. Yeah, you're right.
Maybe Eric Cantor.
Have Eric Cantor come on or do like.
Yeah, because he could be good in the morning. He could also cut off Mika.
Exactly. He wouldn't put up with Mika's guff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So that show has to go and Chris Matthews has to go.
Oh, he's not impressed with, oh, I don't like it. I didn't like Obama's acceptance speech. He's not impressed. This guy has been wrong about everything. He bashed Clinton. He helped elect George W. Bush. He admitted to voting for George W. Bush. He said nothing about the war in Iraq. He must go. Chris Matthews must go.
I see. How,
I like the
Ed show.
You know why I like
the Ed show, Sam? You were like half-hearted.
Get out your cell phones. I like when he says that. Get out your cell phones. I got a question for you. Republicans, not so good or good? Vote.
What? Oh, oh,
so he has a question every hour.
Ed Schultz.
Today's question, are you happy about Obama winning? But A for yes, B for no.
That apparently drives a lot of Twitter traffic, I guess, those text messaging things. I wonder
I just love the way get out. Like I have my cell phone in an Ed show holster ready to get it out.
Do you ever watch Current?
Has everybody left the studio but me and you?
No, it's just No, they're still here. They're just they're busy bees. Sometimes they've got to do other work. Hey, do you have a movie recommendation?
Obama bot was not prepared for this lengthy interview.
All right, so let's go. So wait a sec. So what about movie recommendation? You got a movie recommendation for me this weekend?
Yes. Here's what was. I don't know if you heard when the Hurricane Sandy. They said Hurricane Sandy. If you're seeking shelter. Go to the nearest empty theater showing Cloud Atlas.
Is that movie not good? I don't know anything about it.
I no, haven't
you give me
seen
a streaming
it,
movie.
And it wasn't good.
You got to give me a streaming movie. What are you doing these days? Wait, you know, before we even get to that, I'll give you a time to think about it. But what are you doing these days? Are you touring around the country? Where can people come and see you? Are you doing any TV work?
You mean like that kind of a thing?
Yeah, well, now that we're on the other side of the election. Now let's focus on your career.
Unfortunately, Sam, I did not think of anything happening post-election. So I have I got nothing lined up.
What?
I hope to be on Letterman again.
Yeah.
And our show that we're on together, Bob's Burgers.
Yeah. What about?
I hope to continue to play Mort.
Yeah. Are you getting a lot of Bob's Burgers work? Because they've locked Hugo. It seems to me in some type of like Bob's Burgers jail. He can't even get out. I don't know. I went in the other day and I just did that old guy, that Harold guy. Like I don't even remember the voice every time I go and do it. But Hugo, he's like in Bob's Burgers jail.
I'm on like I can't tell how many I'm going to do. I think I'm on. Like one, I don't know. I can never predict. I'm not on every episode. I would remember that if I were.
Yeah, they're shooting stuff. I think for next Halloween already.
Yeah, I know they've got. They're not shooting the fourth season yet, are they?
I don't know. I mean, I go in so sporadically. I don't know. I'll just go in for the lunch. You can get a free lunch when we go in there. So you're doing Bob's Burgers, and are you going to be you're doing stand up around the country? Do you tour?
I did, but I just got back from stuff, and then I'm going to Melbourne, Australia next year again, second return.
And this is for the comedy
for the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
I told you my
story.
And
I'm also going for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, but that's in April. Between now and then, I'm recharging my batteries. I'm
literally
keeping it low. Yeah. I'm on my schedule as wide open tour.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. Well, maybe we can get you to be on this program with some regularity then.
Do you think Obamabot will?
I think maybe we could probably retire Obamabot.
We'll probably retire. That's been said. There's never a character I've ever done where people say, "Oh, we got to bring back Kimmler's mango again. Bring back his mango." Oh, he's got his goat boy.
We could have you in.
You know what? We're good.
I think there could be some more opportunity. It'll be interesting to see if the Obamabot phenomenon continues. That's what I'm interested to see. That now, without the reelection looming, if the fervor of the support of Obama supporters will continue.
Why did you have me sign a
non-disclosure
an ancillary rights agreement?
Well, just because I've got other Obama bots in the wing. I'm doing the cartoon.
Oh, I thought you had the doll. Ready.
That would have actually been a great idea. All right, so quick, and give me a streaming movie suggestion if you know one. Do you watch Netflix or Amazon or anything like that?
Oh no, I'm bad. What did I just see though that wasn't so bad? I already told you one of these before that you didn't like. There's a movie called Like Crazy I liked.
Like Crazy? See
that one?
No, I didn't.
Crazy?
Never even heard of it.
Otherwise, I haven't seen anything. I'm bad.
Well,
I'm not
what are you
Doug
watching
Benson.
On TV these days? What is a guy like Andy Kindler watching TV?
Well, I always
not Andy Kindler, but a guy like Andy Kindler.
I love Portlandia. I love Stephen Colbert.
Uh huh.
But what about something new? I don't know. You know, because I do that Montreal speech, so I'm kind of like in lockdown. I don't even care anymore for the next couple of months.
Oh, I see. So
what's happening
now? People don't. I don't know if people know this, but you have. How many years have you done this now? For like 10 years?
I've done that speech since 1995. Can you imagine it?
Oh, my God.
17 years.
So there's the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival, which started out as a very much like a – was it always just like very industry?
Well, back when I first went there, it was during the time period where people were getting like sitcoms and then
right.
they would get these sitcom deals. So that just happened to be what the festival was like then. But now it's actually settled back into a more of a – it's a little bit less of that now since there's no more – none of those big deals.
Right,
you were the last one to get one of those big deals.
I think I was. I think I broke it.
Yeah,
I think they were like, "Wait a second, why did we just waste all that money?" I was living on that money for, well, it's long gone now, but for quite a while.
Tim Allen got his big break there. That's right, Tim Allen of Last Man Standing, right?
Yes, I know his work on that quite a bit.
He's back, and he's back, and he's doing not the exact same thing. That he was doing on the last show, but more of a pale comparison.
Yeah,
he's kind of right-wingy, too.
He is. Well, that's not surprising, isn't it? I mean, he was all like, he was very much about that man's man type of guy, right?
Yeah, and I did tweet that I saw the election as a referendum on Dennis Miller. That's how I saw it. And
he
I'm
lost.
Been addicted to listening to bad right-wing shows. Like, his show's terrible, and there's a guy named Mike Gallagher. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yes. He's out of Cincinnati, right? I think Gallagher. No, wait a second. No, that's Cunningham. I listen to a lot of right-wing talk radio. So,
yeah, Mike Gallagher's like one of those people, my book, 14 Things Liberals Will Do to Trip You. And Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager is still on there. Dennis Prager said the other day that the reason for the whole financial problem was that they were forcing – they were forcing these loan people to give loans to poor people.
Yes. Well, you know that's all about is the Community Reinvestment Act, the CRA. And
right.
that basically said that banks no longer allowed to redline mortgages. In other words, they can't say we're not going to give mortgages to people who live in this this zip code, let's say, because they tend to be more minority populations. Now, of course, I know that you know this, Andy, but next time you get into a debate with Dennis Prager, that of the the banks involved in this, in the it's not just subprime, but it was entire mortgage crisis, less than 20% of them were even under the authority of the Community Reinvestment Act. So it's
I need that information because I didn't have that. But I guess of the idea that all these people who were these loan people who were swinging these people into these horrible loans who were making millions upon millions of dollars, they didn't want to make the millions of dollars on these terrible loans.
Right. They were forced to.
Yeah.
They were forced to. And, of course,
they
were the ones who sold them off to be securitized, which had absolutely nothing to do with the Community Reinvestment Act.
Well, and who passed the law, though, that they were able to just do these kind of loans, make all that money?
I mean, there was a lot of deregulation involved in this, and it allowed basically—
Glass-Steagall!
Well, yeah, Glass-Steagall was part of it. The securitization business just it exploded, and that was a big problem.
I never go with the blame the poor excuse.
Well,
go with that.
All right. So what else we got? Anything else, Andy? Or
I wish we did. I wish I lived up to your expectations of that. At the end of a conversation all the time, you say, "What movie?" I could say I saw Largo or Argo.
How was
I saw Argo?
Argo. How was it?
But that's not what you want. You want some kind of find, a special nugget that only I would know about.
Right.
The Real Housewives. I got nothing, Sam. Second year of Whitney. I'm all geared up for that.
Well,
I love that America's Got Talent was won by a dog as well as Britain's Got Talent.
I had no idea about that. I don't follow
a dog act. One, America's Got Talent, your favorite show, and Britain's Got Talent, Piers Morgan's favorite show. A dog act.
See it, but
where's that act go? Where's that going to Vegas? Coming to Vegas this week is the dog act. two tickets down front for the dog act.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Kindler, very mad that dogs are taking
this is
his,
the weakest
his work.
Close of my life. I apologize for this closing bit.
No, well, I've got to run actually, and
Okay, Sam. I hope you edit this down to dynamite, baby.
Oh, no, we don't need to, buddy. This is pure gold. Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, Andy.
Thank you, Sam. Be cool, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
All right, folks. You have a great weekend. We will be back on Monday. We will have a show from the archives for you members. And for you freeloaders, we'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new show. That's correct. Have a great Veterans Day to our veterans out there. Thank you so much for your service. And my hope is that we don't send you to any more wars. And on top of that, I would also say my hope is that we're not engaging in any more wars. In the meantime, we will be back on Tuesday live. All right, folks, have a great weekend. Satan, I will pay.